Welcome to the Powering Potential with Robert Walters podcast, where we speak to business leaders around the globe to bring you the latest trends and insights from the world of work.
I'm Phoebe Garrett, Managing Consultant of the Robert Walters National Legal Recruitment Team in Australia, and it's a pleasure to be joined today by Emily Matter, General Counsel at Siemens Energy, Anna Young, Head of Compliance at Medibank. Today, we'll be continuing our discussions throughout this series to explore the evolving role of general counsels and in-house legal teams. In recent years, something that has come up regularly in conversation with in-house leaders is the subject of needing to wear an ever-increasing number of hats. Anna, I might throw to you first. Is this something that you've experienced and how so?
Yes, absolutely, Phoebe. When I first started in-house, our roles were really segmented. And so you were required largely either to be reviewing contracts on the commercial side or reviewing contracts on the corporate side. And so the lawyers often didn't even sit together. And over the last 15 or so years, I've seen a significant change in the role of in-house counsel and certainly general counsel. And I think that's a really good reflection in terms of the GCs being a safe set of hands within an organisation. And so it just so happens that if there's a group within corporate where they don't have a nice fit with a manager, they tend to be given to the GCs. So in my time, I've managed all sorts of teams, insurance and risk and legal, property, all sorts of things over the years. So it's been a bit of a baptism of fire in terms of management.
Yeah, awesome. No, I it's a very common thing that I hear that I think often when there's a question that someone may not necessarily know who to go to, I think legal often is the go-to person.
100%.
Emily, how about yourself?
Yeah, well, Anna's right. I mean, I think it's probably because in legal we're across so many different topics. And so that might be why we might be the go-to people. When I started, I'm part of a global corporation. When I started at Siemens, I reported into the company secretary. And he, at the time, they didn't have a legal person, and not in Australia anyway. And he used to do, was a bit of a bush lawyer. And I came on and a colleague of mine came on as legal, so advising on disputes. They'd had some disputes, that litigation they needed to have, and then also reviewing contracts, etc. We've always had a good contract management commercial team, but the legals give it that extra finesse. But then when he retired, I took on company secretary. And the connection, I think, for me with company secretary is the obligation to comply with the Corporations Act. So I think that's a really good fit for us because we're complying with legislation. We know the legislation. So I don't see that being a real problem. And then, as company secretary, you sit on the board meeting. So you become the trusted advisor that way. And because that person was reviewing contracts and we were involved in litigation, we also then got the insurance. So insurance has sat with us for a long time in legal, and what we try and do is get the financial part of it helped by the finance team. But strangely, insurance sits with us, and I think the connection there is litigation that's run by the liability insurer and just looking at all those clauses in contracts. IP we handled. I don't do that so much anymore. And since I moved to Siemens Energy, which is a group company, I do compliance as well. So everything to do with anti-bribery and corruption, antitrust, so competition law, is also part of my scope. And I think it all ties in together on the whole because they're regulatory based. So we're really well placed to advise on regulatory requirements and on litigation as well. The issue, I think, which we at the Association of Corporate Counsel are grappling with is legal professional privilege. And as lawyers, we really have to segregate that out, make sure that when we are giving legal advice, we make it clear. I mean, we can always claim it correctly, but we do need to be clear that we're acting in our role as legal advisor, and this is legal advice that we're giving. And that's something that the Association of Corporate Counsel, as part of our advocacy role, we're working to make it absolutely clear that even if we do wear a number of hats, when we are acting in our role as legal counsel, that we, like any other lawyer admitted to do practice, isn't or with a current practicing certificate, is and should be entitled to be, you know, the trusted advisor and protected by legal professional privilege. That's something that we've sort of been in the spotlight recently, and we're very passionate about making sure that we act ethically in relation to legal professional privilege. But the fact that we may wear different hats should not mean that we don't get the protection when we're acting as lawyers. I just wanted to throw that in the mix because it's been quite topical for the advocacy group at the Association of Corporate Counsel.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, because it's something that I've particularly had to turn my mind to in my current role as a senior executive compliance, because my team, whilst a lot of them hold law degrees, aren't practicing solicitors. And to your point, Em, around things like events and incidents, it's a really natural fit for me just to lob in and give legal advice. But certainly in APRA regulated entities, I've really found that there's a stronger emphasis on first, second, and third line. And so I sit very squarely in second line in terms of the group compliance team. But then there's this question of what are lawyers doing, and when am I giving legal advice, and do I sit in the second line or not, or the line one and a half, or as I prefer to argue, certainly when I'm wearing my in-house lawyer cap, I don't actually sit in any line. I'm actually a trusted advisor, and I don't need to sit in the line. I'm exactly that. I'm an advisor, and that's why LPP comes into play. And so I have to be very, very careful when I send emails that I'm making it really clear when I'm providing legal advice wearing that cap. And it's something I think we have to more consciously manage as we go through as in-house professionals.
Mm.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think that's it's such a good conversation and a good point to bring up, because I think it's not something that's necessarily spoken about very often when lawyers obviously do often have to wear many hats on the in-house side. So that's I think that's really interesting.
Yeah.
And I guess moving into kind of from where you do transition and start taking on some more responsibilities in areas that are broader than just giving straight legal advice, how do you kind of manage learning those different areas and perhaps being a little bit less on the tools on the legal side? Maybe Emily, if you want to kick off.
Yeah, well, look, I've been an in-house counsel for over 25 years. So over that time, I've managed to pick up a lot of stuff. I've got very good at being a general, you know, just like you go to the doctor and they're a GP, I'm good at as a general counsel. So I kind of can pick up on things. But when I first went in-house many years ago, I remember talking to one of the lawyers. I was at a mid-sized law firm, and he said, "You're not going to be able to do that." And I said, "Oh, well, you know, I really wanted to work for a German company at the time." So I said, "Well, this is my dream job. I'll just have to work it out." And he gave me two books. One was a book on joint ventures, because I was a commercial litigator at the time. One was a book on joint ventures law in Australia, and the other one was a book on technology contracts. And I had 6 weeks, and I read them both cover to cover. And they were actually really helpful, because they touched on a lot of other things, not just those ones. So I was sort of ready to wing it. And I did, when I say wing it, I'd sort of say, all right, I'll get back to you. And the other thing that I always say is that call a friend. So I had a friend of mine who is our immediate past president of the national president of ACC. And she said she'd been in-house for a while, and she said to me, "Hey, give me a call if you need something." And I remember going, "I'll get back to you." It was something about an international letter of credit, which I very rarely use these days, but at the time, I thought, I've got no idea. I know a lot about Victorian Supreme Court civil procedure rules, which I know less about now, but I did at the time. And I didn't know anything about letters of credit, which are things that you need for international shipping, you know, so, well, to make sure that people get paid. Anyway, called it dial a friend, and she was super and just helped me out completely. And I sort of went back all refreshed because, and this is just an embarrassment to say this, but back in the day, we didn't even have Google, can you believe it? Not until a couple of years later. So that's just a complete embarrassing admission to make. But so it was very much dial a friend, grab a book, go to the library. These days, I tend to use some really good subscription services, actually, apart from dial a friend in my company. But if it's Australian law, they might not know the answer to that. But yeah, it's we dial a friend, or I do use some, there's some really good services you can use to look up. Yeah, so that I subscribe to a couple of them.
Yeah, I think that's actually how we've all become close over sort of the last 15, 20 years within ACC Australia, isn't it? It's just I think a lot of people don't realise exactly how close and small the Australian in-house community is. And so there is lots of sort of calling each other up at the back end, obviously maintaining confidentiality, but yeah. You know, asking about an industry, asking if they've had any experience in something. And I've had the same thing. I've had, you know, been in board meetings where the chair has asked for something that I've had no idea what they're talking about. and a text or an email goes out to the inner circle and sort of saying, can someone, you know, point me in the right direction? And I had the same thing when I left private practice and went in-house. I was given a finance book, a finance for basics, so that I could speak to the CFO.
I learned that later.
and it was interesting because the books that I was given were actually given to me by other in-house counsels. So there's a lot of support within the network.
Yeah.
But I mean, the other thing in terms of me learning other capability is that one of the great advantages in the GC cohort is that you have access to super smart people within your company and other specialist areas. And so I've always been acutely aware that I'm not the smartest person in the room. I might know about the law, but I don't know about it, everything else. And so I've learned over the years the power of asking the dumb question. And, you know, I've had various people throughout my career who've just been so generous in their time in terms of giving me stuff to read, giving me precedents, giving me counsel so that I look good. And so you do tend to fudge your way through it. But I mean, certainly that's, again, one of the big conversations we're having with ACC Australia at the moment is how do we help our general counsel and legal counsel cohorts learn in a really quick way these other skills that you need to figure out as you kind of fumble your way along.
Yeah, and I think I'm a big believer in obviously you can go to external counsel and so on, and you can certainly do that. But also, it's not that these days, God, it's not that hard to look up the law, right? And I do kind of like to do a little bit of research. Obviously, part of being in-house counsel, particularly when you go from a private law firm, is understanding what you don't know. Mm. I think we have probably a little bit more flexibility on liability. So I guess if you're a law firm, you've got to just give the exact answer. You're putting it on your letterhead. You could be sued. In-house, there's a bit of a caveat around it. Like you would never, obviously you make sure your advice is correct or something, but you can say, look, I'm not an expert in this. You know, you definitely can do that. And I think it would be, it's always very wise to be honest and say, I'm going to get back to you on that. But educate yourself. I don't think it's too hard to sort of get a working understanding of most things. I think it's when people say things are complex, I tend to think they're trying to tell me, don't look into this further. That might be from a compliance perspective, I normally get concerned as well. But like, for example, say we can't do this for tax reasons, or we must do this for tax reasons. I go, okay, which particular section of the Act were you talking about? Or, you know, like I always think it's good to dig deep, and we can get our head around things as well. So, yeah, it's not too hard.
I think the other thing as well that I've discovered over the years is I actually just go to the source data. I mean, sometimes
so in-house,
you've got really, really great precedent systems, and they're fabulous. And don't get me wrong, I would love them in-house. But it is interesting the amount of times I've found that, you know, in my job, I think you're probably the same, I always just have the Corporations Act next to me. I'm such a nerd. And as people are talking to me, I'm reading it. But, you know, we've got some, you know, new legislation that applies to us here at work. And I've just actually skipped all the summary documents and just gone straight. And I'm just really geeky, but I've just read the Act, and that's always my starting point. And then I kind of build it out in terms of applying it. But I find
I completely agree with that.
The more you read the source, the quicker it is actually to get on top of what the law is.
Mm. And I do seem to remember when I was in a law firm, you've got all these precedents, but you actually don't know where they come from or what they're for. Like, for example, and I was just thinking that yesterday, I was looking at some pleadings, they were federal court pleadings, that, and I was just like, no, yeah, it says rule, blah, blah, and so on. And I think when you're a junior lawyer, you just take the law firm documents without really knowing where or how they've been done. And I think as in-house counsel, we kind of need to know what's the source of this. We don't have somebody preparing everything for us. I mean, in that case, I was looking at a law firm's document. But, yeah, I think it's quite nice to have to work things out for yourself at times.
Yeah, and I think also there is that added incentive to really, really get it right because you live it. You've got to look the
That's
person
right.
who's,
That's true.
Who's got the stress of being in a federal court proceeding in front of you, and you have to see them day in, day out. So you want to do – you've got that personal relationship with them, and so you do want to do an exceptional job. You don't want to not be looking at all of their really important information. So and also being side by side with that person, I think – has always incentivized me to learn it and learn it well, because you've got that lived experience. Because sometimes you can do a transaction and that's great, and you can, you know, pat yourself on the back that you've done a really good negotiation or whatever, but we actually see the proof in the pudding. And so you learn in terms of when there's a debate about something, because we live it, you learn not to draft it that way the next time, for example.
It's not theoretical. Paranoia. I feel I'm at the paranoid stage at the moment. You look at a contract clause and you say, I know that's going to come back to
I know, you've got so many war stories, don't you?
I know. And, you know, I know we agreed to that before.
And I guess on that kind of point that you've both kind of touched on there, I guess being across everything when you're an in-house counsel, how do you decide when to outsource a certain type of work, whether it's for the specialty or for the workload, or how do you kind of make those decisions?
Great question.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, to take from the castle, a bit of it's the vibe. it's just experience. So you get a really good radar for this sort of stuff. And so a little bit like Emily was saying, like I've learned over the years to really just trust my gut and trust experience. I've had so many conversations with senior execs, which are, I can't put my finger on it yet, but I'm not comfortable. And again, it's that trust piece. And when that flag goes off for me and I have the, I can't put my finger on it and I'm not comfortable, that's when I'll usually stress test that with, you know, my external law firm partners in terms of, am I missing something? And I tend to, different companies do different things, but I tend to have people that I have had relationships with for many, many years, and I'll do that, pick up the phone, do the stress test chat, and that's when they will help me kind of scope out what I should be worried about and not worried about, and then that really starts to guide my thinking in terms of whether I need to go external. And I think, Emily, it's kind of what you were saying, knowing what you don't know. So as much as we were saying, you look it up and you figure it out, there are some things that you know, it burns the company down type of stuff that you think, no, I need that subject matter expertise.
So. Oh, completely. And I think you should never be too embarrassed to do that. I was just thinking while you were talking, there's a couple of things that I regularly brief out, and one of those is real estate transactions. When I first started, I used to look at commercial leases, and actually nothing really went wrong, but I find...
Not really.
No. It wasn't a lease that I negotiated. I remember there was some issue that came up with some council fee that no one had thought of, but okay, that wasn't too bad. But I have found it, and I think it's like if you're DIY, you know, tiling your bathroom, right? Yeah, you can do it. It's going to take you a hell of a lot longer than someone who, or paint your house even, which yes, you can do as well. But sometimes you get a tradie coming in who does this day in, day out. They do it all the time. And so isn't it better just to let them do it, because they'll do it quicker and more efficiently and more effectively? And for me, with real estate transactions, and we don't have so many anymore, but it might be a lease or something. In another state of Victoria, there might be, I don't know, do you have to register the lease? Do you have to, what's the going negotiation point on outgoings or something like that? And that, I feel that we've got a great law firm that we, or great lawyer that we use for that. And it's really good. They do it all the time. They know all the ins and outs, all the various, what's an acceptable risk profile, what's not. So that I tend to brief out. Employment law, I will give just general advice and on that. But when things get a bit trickier, I tend to brief out as well. You know, I'm obviously, but that's when things are getting a little bit more contentious. And then, yes, and that's the other one. I did have one matter that was giving me sleepless nights, and I did brief it out, but then I briefed it out to another law firm as well. It was a really complex niche area of the law, just finding a lawyer that knew how to deal with this area of the law. It was a regulatory topic, but also involved a lot of international agreements. That was really great. And it was also just having someone in there, you know, just helping out. The other thing is also, you know, when you say burn the house down, Anna, it's also, it comes to a point where you really do need to cover yourself too. And that's just being sensible. Sometimes sharing a problem is really worthwhile. So you've got, you know, this calming voice of an expert who does this all the time. So I always feel, yeah, we're experts. We're experts, you know, in general matters across a very broad range of legal issues. But yeah, that's when I'll brief it out. And then capacity can be a bit tricky. I don't know what your view on this is, Anna, but I find, you know, when we're really busy, getting somebody in can be helpful, but there's a lot of internal processes, and I'm always a little bit hesitant because then I've got, and you've got to put the time into training them, showing them how we do things. And that can be a bit tricky, depending on what, it does work. And I've definitely used it for maternity leave placements and things like that. When you're short-term really busy, it can be difficult to brief out because of the time you've got to spend getting that person up to speed. When I say brief out, I mean get an intern in or something. But it can work. It can work. It's just we have a lot of internal procedures and policies and internally agreed risk management, risk profile. I don't know what your view on that is, Anna. Yeah, it's a bit harder on the capacity front.
Depends how big your team is, but I think that's why I probably quite naturally I've got people that I know work with me really well. Your external lawyers who work with me really well.
Mm.
They know me, they know my style, they know my stakeholders. And so that does make it easier because, you know, for my style and certainly in my general counsel positions, the 20-page advice isn't that useful because you're moving so fast, right? So it's kind of like you've just got to hit the headlines and get it done. And I've always used partners who really get that. And so I've found that pretty good, but it's actually interesting in terms of the cover yourself piece as well, because I think over the last sort of 15 years, when you look at some of these inquiries and royal commissions and whatnot, it always interests me to see that the general counsel is increasingly getting put in the hot seat. And because they do have the seat at the table and such a broad remit, it's almost as if often there's a higher standard that they're held to. And so that's also something you've got to be really cognizant of these days, not to scare anyone about being a GC, but you know, it's really about making sure that you do have the right advisors in your pocket. So as much as your role is to advise the company and to assist the company, it is also sometimes good when you see that something may not be going as well as you like to have that external partner as well, and especially also when you've got to give a hard message that the exec don't want to hear, having that external person to say, you know, actually Anna's not catastrophizing this, here's some other examples that we're seeing with other organizations, is also really powerful to be able to work through to get a, you know, a good outcome.
Yeah, that's right. And also they might often, that because we're used to the one client, whereas for the one company, the one business, external counsel have seen, you know, they've got it, they have lots of clients, so they've got a much better understanding of what other people are doing. So that can be really helpful as well, because we sort of, as with everybody, can get a bit self-obsessed and used to the way we do things. We're all self-obsessed, let's be honest.
No, awesome. And I guess on a bit of a different note, and obviously a very common move, which both of you have done and is a very common conversation we're having from our side, is lawyers making that jump from private practice in-house and that transition, which can be quite a big leap of faith. Is there any particular advice you would give to junior lawyers or just lawyers in general who are making a move into an in-house role, where the role may be a bit broader than just legal advice?
I think from my perspective, it's such a great time to come in-house. Both Em and I have been in-house for a long time, and it has changed a lot over the years.
That's true.
In the sense that I think we've gotten a lot better at professional development, career coaching, mentoring, all that sort of soft skills good stuff. And we're thinking in-house teams used to be very flat-lined, and so there was nowhere for you to go, whereas now the opportunities of working really closely with really senior people in business is just amazing. You know, here at Medibank, I see members of the legal team go into the business as non-lawyers and they come back in as lawyers. So all of those other things are just available to them. In terms of for people thinking about coming in-house, I think some people get a bit concerned because they're a specialist in a practice group in a law firm. Mm-hmm. And really, I don't know what you're like, Em, but I've always gone for fit. I've always thought about, are you going to be a good fit for the business stakeholders? Are you passionate about this, and are you passionate about learning about the business? I can teach you the legal stuff. As long as, you know, they've got those basics and they've really used their formative years well, I don't particularly mind if you're a property lawyer or a litigator or an IT lawyer. You can always find work to use their natural safe space and their strengths in our roles, and then use the opportunity to get them to mirror you and upskill them in the other areas of the law. So, you know, I like that. I like being a generalist. It's, you know, the idea of looking at the same contract every day is not my idea of bringing joy and fun into the workplace. I don't know what your experiences are, Em.
I was just thinking about a particular contract I'm looking at the moment that's giving me grief. But, look, what I would say is when you go in-house, it was really interesting because my dad had, I remember he gave me some advice. He'd worked for multinational as well. And I wouldn't necessarily take this on at all, but I'm just going to recount this because it's kind of funny. You know, he said, now, remember, Emily, bullshit baffles brains. which actually is probably bad advice. He said that, but I kind of get it. You can be. I'm not saying you should bullshit.
Good clarification.
For clarification, I'm not condoning that. But I think what he meant was one of my CEOs who was a mentor told me, he always used to say, put your detector, your BS detector up, you know, and just be aware that people may look and sound really important, but they may well not know any more than you do. So just be confident. And if you don't know the answer, just say, I'll get back to you. That's fine. And then obviously I really like what Anna said before about a natural fit. Like if you're going for a job interview, it is good to try and see whether or not, you know, you've got that feeling that it will be a fun place to work with people that respect the law and so on and so forth. What you would not want is to go into a company where you were just being hired to cover the company, but actually they had no respect for the law. I would definitely be wary of that. I don't know. I've never worked for a company like that, but I think that's important. Always remember you've got to act with integrity. Find some people that are going to support you. Hopefully there'll be a legal team that you can reach out to there. But otherwise, as we said before, at ACC, Association Corporate Counsel, we always support each other, and there's other ways, law firms and so on, where you can get help. And the other thing that my dad said was, I remember he said, I don't just be one of those people that says no all the time.
Yeah.
Now, on the integrity front, you do have to say no. You have to be strict. You have to say it's N and it's no, and it's O and it's no. So bribery, corruption, the answer's no. So there's lots of no's there, but everybody knows that, right? Everyone knows you've got to comply with the law. So leaving compliance aside, because we know the answer to those sorts of questions is no. You do, as in-house counsel, need to be compliance focused, yes, but solution focused. Mm. You really do need to. So, for example, if you're in negotiations with the customer, you kind of have to come up with a compromise, come up with a solution. And the same with the business. For example, you know, one thing when the business comes to you, obviously there are ways to get out of doing things that really they could do themselves by sending them a checklist or giving them a few tips without sort of trawling through the document that they're supposed to read. But there's other things, like when you're busy, rather than just saying no, you might say, can't do it today, but I can get it back to you on Friday or next Wednesday. There's lots of things like that. I think it's really important for us to... We are there to assist, and it's important for us to realise we're there to assist, because if all you do is say, oh, no, we couldn't possibly agree to that, which you may, there'll be a couple of things that are showstoppers, but most of the time, but we could agree to this. So it's about, and I think just in life in general, whether you're in-house or external, it's all about relationships at the end of the day. So, and I think solution-focused and taking on a solution-focused approach would be, I think, a great way to start a job as in-house.
Yeah. And I think as well, you know, our job is to protect people, but also to make sure that the company has a long and sustainable future. So and if you go with that lens, then it does. Well, I find that
it
forces me to be solutions focused. And the other thing as well that I always say is, no one gets out of bed in the morning and thinks, I'm going to do a bad job at work today. And so when someone's maybe not followed the right procedure or got themselves into a bit of a bind or a bit emotional about something, it's not about that they're annoying and that they've done the wrong thing, or it just doesn't matter. It's like when you're sick and you go to a doctor and you want help. Well, you've got something that's problematic in the business world and you go to the lawyer in-house to help you. And so being able to a key thing that I've found is understanding commercially their priorities, so that lets me be a little bit sympathetic to where they're coming from, but also really being an emotional support as well. So,
yeah, that's,
you know,
right,
taking the time to say, and it's simple, but it's so powerful, to say, are you okay? Mm-hmm. This must be really hard for you to be in this situation. okay, just sit down and calmly tell me what's going on and we'll work through it together. And it's about being that partner side by side with your business partners to assist them in going through. And I've found that that always helps with the messaging internally as well, when sometimes you do unfortunately have to say, yeah, that's not great, we're probably not going to go down that path.
But that's where legal professional privilege comes in as well, right? Because if you're not too scary, so we want people to come and say, oh my goodness, I think I've, well, perhaps they do. They come to us and say, I've never had someone say, you know, I have had people say to me, oh, I think I've broken the law. And normally they hadn't actually, but, you know, but you're able to say, okay, tell me what happened. All right, now let's think about this. I know, you know, maybe, for example, they sent a confidential document to the wrong person, for example. All right, what are we going to do about that? All right, well, I'll tell you what, I'll get onto their GC, we'll ask them to delete everything and move on, right? But the poor person is really worried, and if you're too scary, then they're not going to tell you about that. And this is the whole point of legal professional privilege, right? Because someone might come to you and say, oh, I think I've broken the law, and actually they haven't, you know, like, but... You know, like, that's why we need to have these open and honest discussions, and we are the first port of call. I do think it's important to understand that when you're in-house counsel, that you do need to be approachable and open on those sorts of topics. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And no, I think that's probably one of the key takeaways from the discussion we've had this afternoon. I think that at the core of all of this is having good relationships, whether it's with the business or the stakeholders within the business or external counsel, and or even just the legal community more broadly, whether it's through something like the ACCC. I think just having those strong relationships is really at the core of you can really help you succeed in your legal career.
Very much so. Yeah. Very much so. Yeah.
And that's where the satisfaction comes from. So
it does, doesn't it?
You know, like my boss at the moment is someone that I've met through ACC. I've met Emily through ACC.
Yes.
A huge community. We still, you know, from old committees, we still have you know, dinner catch-ups and chat groups and all that sort of stuff. So it's a lovely profession to be involved in.
It is. And then just the people if you've been involved in some project that's been really hard to negotiate, for example, you're in-house counsel, you're on the team with everybody. I've been on contracts that we took, it was so, one of my first contracts, it was very intense. And none of us got haircuts. It was bizarre. Everyone's hair just got longer and longer. I wouldn't do that now. But in the time, I know it was bizarre, wasn't it? It was like 7 days a week, this project, and I wouldn't do that again. I would say, no, I'm taking time out to get a haircut. But it was pretty funny. And I've seen that contract all the way through, you know, delivery, all the things that happen on a contract. You know, one of the proponents ended up going broke, and then, you know, all the things that you go through, and then on the maintenance. And when you're in-house, first of all, I did make build some great relationships on that project, but also you stay with it, right, when you're with the company, because you as a team, you're there from whatever you negotiated right at the start, and you're there right at the bitter end, and hopefully you're there with the customer and you can all, you know, be happy at the end of the day. And so
you're
at
transition
forth.
Out, yeah.
But it's you are there for the long haul, and you make a lot of friends with the business and with other counsel that you're involved in along the way as well. So it's nice.
Actually, I reckon that's when you know that you've been a successful in-house counsel. Like there's a company that I worked for, I don't know, nearly 20 years ago, 18 years ago, and still get invited to drinks. And I think, yep, I did a good job for them.
Success. Yeah. No, that's awesome. And no, I think that's all really, really helpful and really insightful to know around kind of, how to approach your legal career and building those relationships. So, I mean, thank you so much for both making the time today to have this conversation. It's been really, really fantastic. And like I said, really insightful. So, thank you so much.
Thanks, Phoebe.
Thanks for inviting us.